In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Hey, football fans, you want the real deal? The raw, unfiltered truth about everything going down in the NFL? Join Mark Schlereth, 3-time Super Bowl champ, on the Stinkin' Truth podcast. He's breaking it all down for you. No punches pulled. From the game-changing moments that won or lost a game to the player evaluations, this is analysis you won't hear anywhere else. Mark's got you covered. So strap in and get ready for the ride, because this isn't your average football podcast. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Second and 5 at the Jacksonville 48-yard line. No backs. 3 receivers left. Schaub in the gun. Throws it right side. Wide receiver screen. Andre Johnson across the 40. 35 to his right 30. 25, 20, 15, 10, 5. Rock and roll. The Texans win it. Andre Johnson, 48 yards. My goodness. Houston wins in overtime.
That was 2012. The Jacksonville Jaguars. Matt Schaub threw for about 8,000 yards that day. Andre Johnson had most of them. He was on the receiving end of a lot of them, and that was those were good times, man. And we are joined right now on stage here. It's the Texans legend, brought to you by Chevron, the human energy company. Great to be joined out here by the man who authored that play and over 20,000 yards of passing and 124 touchdown passes for the Houston Texans. Give it up for Matt Schaub joining us out here on stage. What's going on, Matt?
Oh, appreciate it, guys. Yeah. It definitely hasn't gotten any cooler here in Houston, especially in August, but no, great to be back and be on your show.
Yeah, it's awesome. So let's start there with Andre. We'll talk plenty about this team and this offense and whatnot, but that was one of many memories you and Andre had. How cool was that to see him go into Canton? I know you were up there for the festivities.
It was amazing just to be a part of that and witness, you know, what we all knew was going to happen eventually. And it's just great for him to third time on the ballot and that he gets in. You're just to share in that and to know what we were able to do, both as a wide receiver quarterback combo, but our team and all the teammates that showed up and what we were able to accomplish here, bringing the organization from where they were to a division champion and playoff team. You know, it's just cool to see the culmination of all his hard work and what he put into this city and this organization.
Well, and you had seen, you know, Andre had been in Gary Kubiak's offense for a year by the time you got here. And they started using him a little bit differently. You can't really compare and contrast it, but did you see just exactly how it was going to be different for him that first year you got here and how he might really just take a catapult as a receiver?
Yeah, obviously with the new system, the year before I got here, there's a lot to learn. Yeah. There's a lot of nuances and route adjustments on the fly that you have to make and just watching how they operated. Just coming in and just want to do my job and work with him and how Andre runs routes and getting on the same page. There was a lot of hours spent when I first signed, you know, throwing and just getting used to throwing to a guy like him. Because he's special, right? And understanding his strengths and what he does really well. But, you know, we hit the ground running that first year. And, you know, when you have a guy like that, you just want to give him an opportunity because he can make you look really good. And he's going to make a lot of guys miss with the football because he's so big and strong, you know. So it's just a matter of getting him the ball in space and letting him go to work.
And just, you don't want to think it consciously, but don't screw this up, right? Like,
you do think about it. Yeah, it's just like, just don't bounce it. Just give him a chance.
Well, what is it? Like, classically, it's just like keep it simple. Like, you don't have to be like, it is, you know, we've got this good opportunity and just execute the basics on this play and then there you go.
For sure. I mean, when you have a guy like him, you have a guy like Kevin Waltz, you have an Owen Daniels, you have, you know, the backs that we had when we first got here, you just have all these weapons. And that's what's great about Gary Kubiak's system is, yes, you want to focus on one receiver. You want to get Andre the ball. Everyone knows you want to get him the ball, but utilize all your weapons and just put guys in position to be successful against whatever defense you're facing. And, you know, the ball's going to find him. You don't want to force it, but you just run your offense. And when you have those kind of weapons around him, man, it's tough on a defense.
Matt Schaub, Texans, former Texans quarterback, joining us out here live on stage. It's Texans Countdown presented by Modelo Especial. We've talked a lot, Matt, about the run game with this team this year. They had trouble running the football last year. C.J. Stroud was amazing. Take us through this offense, and you guys obviously, whether it was Steve Slayton in 2008 or Arian Foster forever after that, Can you speak to the challenges of getting that the run game in this offense to that level?
Sure, and that's something we faced when I first came in. You know, that was a big factor, is trying to get the run game going. Amon Green came in as a free agent the year that I signed, and there was just, with Mike Sherman as the coordinator, we were trying to get back to running the football first to set up the play action and everything. And when it doesn't really work and you're averaging 3 yards a rush, where you want to be around 4, 4.2, you know, sometimes that makes it hard. Now, our play action game is still pretty good, given that, but that's something I know that with this offense, with Bobby Slowick and where CJ's at, he had such a phenomenal year. Well, guess what? All the teams are watching that tape all offseason of this offense and how we can slow him down. Well, they add Stephon Diggs and they add all these pieces, but then you go out and get Joe Mixon, you know, to go with Damian Pierce. You get Cam Akers, who I know he's had injuries. You bring in these pieces, and they have a good offensive line. How can they get a little more juice out of the run game to take some pressure off CJ on third down, to make it more manageable, stay efficient, and control the football? And that's going to make the play-action game so much more lethal for them.
And it's one of the things that CJ has mentioned this offseason was getting more involved and better at the run game portion of it, where in this offense, and you've played in several offenses, you had a couple different stints with Kyle Shanahan, like what can the quarterback do to help out the run game in this offense?
Well, I think one thing you'll see is, you know, maybe a lot more check with me's.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that's part of their system last year, but sometimes with a rookie quarterback, you try to take a little bit off them. I'm sure as the year went on, you add more and more of those things. But you might go to the line of scrimmage with three plays. Call one, but you can go to others. Some code words, some things at the line of scrimmage based on what the safeties are doing or your defensive front. Just put a little more on his plate and make it a little bit more of an advantageous situation and get to a play that's going to be better than the one you called.
Did you ever get to a point in your career where, like all of a sudden you felt like, oh, man, this is I know so much now? But it tends to be also as your body starts to decline a little bit, and like,
I think we all get there at some point.
I shouldn't have said did you, but that part for quarterbacks especially though, because I mean you just hear so many of you guys, by the time you get after you've been in the league a decade or so, you can just see things automatically, right? And I guess in Atlanta, you were a really good resource for the younger guys. You're basically a quarterback's coach in some regards, at the end of your career, right?
You find yourself in that role. And when I got to Atlanta in 2016, and I'm backing up Matt Ryan, who had been doing it at such a high level and been so durable, you know, that, yes, I knew how to get myself ready to play, and I knew what it took mentally and physically throughout the week. But where can I add some more value to what I bring from my experiences? And that was more for the defense. Mm-hmm. You know, run the cards for the defense to give them the best look I can. Well, I'm trying to help them with some of the looks that they're seeing.
Yeah.
Then I'm trying to help the young receivers, the young linemen offensively with some of their process and how they're going about getting ready to play.
Yeah.
So there's a way you can just add, because there's some things you want to try to take off the starter's plate so they can just focus on their job and the guys that they're going to be in the huddle with. But how can we all get better? And that's, as you get to be a veteran, especially at the quarterback position, you can, you know, have your hands in on a lot of different things to help different players out.
What's the biggest lesson that you wished you'd learned earlier in your career? Like, if I just done this in my third or fourth season, it would have been that much better.
Well, I mean, it'd be easy to say, hey, don't throw in too many interceptions. That's like the glaring one, right?
I don't know what you're talking about, man.
But, you know, some of those things still haunt you. But, I mean, it's just getting a process earlier of how to go. Like, you learn by doing it, and so there's only so much you can have told to you.
You have to have it beat into your head a little bit,
and shown to you. You almost have to just go through it.
Yeah.
And there's different ways to learn. There's different ways to prepare yourself to play or to get ready for the opportunity to play. Like when I was in Atlanta, my first year was backing up Michael Vick. I learned so many things from just watching him go about his process. There's things you learn that you want to implement in your own routine, but there's also things you're like, you know what, I think I want to do it differently. Mm-hmm. And at that time, he was one of the most visible athletes in all the world, so why not just take a little bit of notes about what he was going through, the media obligations, the things with the coaches, what he's going through when it's a good win or a tough loss. And so it's just things that you try to jot down, but then just learning the game plan, learning the system. How can you be more efficient in that? Because when you look at it in totality, it can be overwhelming. But when you really hone in on certain things, it's a little bit easier to pick up breaking it down.
Yeah. I like studying Michael Vick especially. I like to think you have an old notebook somewhere where it says, run for 75 yards.
Yeah, I was going to say run faster.
Well, when I had that note, I crossed it out. Yeah. So I'm like, it's not going to happen.
That's great. Matt Schaub joining us here on Texans Countdown, presented by Modelo Especial. You talked about that mix that you had with the skill guys here. Back when you were the quarterback for the Texans, C.J. Stroud has some high-level weapons now, and with Nico Collins, Tank Dell, Stephon Diggs. These are all guys who could be number one receivers on any given team out there. How different does that make what Bobby Slowick is doing from what you had back in the day?
Well, I'd have to say, based on our offense we had here in Atlanta, I mean, I think the skill positions, when you look at it as a whole group,
yeah,
wide receivers, running backs, tight ends,
it's a great group.
They're very comparable, right?
Yeah.
And but what they have right now, I mean, I saw this on ESPN as they ranked the wide receiver group number one in the going into the NFL season, which I totally agree with. And you can go past the first group. Look at the second group when you add Robert Woods, Noah Brown. Like, there's plenty of talent in that wide receiver room, and they're going to be fighting for reps. But that's a luxury that you have as a quarterback and a play caller. Just throw the dart at the dartboard and, you know, let it just go find the open guy.
Yeah.
You know what? And you had Dalton Schultz at tight end.
Right.
And I mean, they've
Joe
got
Mixon.
Kate Stover, the rookie, too. He's only been playing tight end for 2 years. He's done some good things, too.
For sure. And he's got guys ahead of him to just watch.
You know, as you talk about all those different offenses and in a Kubiak-Shanahan-type system, the classic is you want these big-bodied wide receivers, the way it is in San Francisco right now. And I guess that's one area where this is a little bit different because two of your top three guys are not bigger guys.
Sure.
They're both willing to tackle Stephon Diggs and, or excuse me, block and Stephon Diggs and Tank Dell. And you know, without knowing exactly how it's going to look, does it feel a little bit almost more like the early Sean McVay Rams offenses, the way it's constructed, than the Kyle Shanahan offenses?
I think there's an element of that too, for sure. You know, the one thing, you look at Stephon Diggs and Tank Dell, they're not physically imposing, but they're tough.
Yeah.
And they're tough with the ball in their hands. You know, you saw that last week with the touchdown the Tank had. I mean, just his physicality after the catch is huge. But Nico Collins, just watching him last season, just the physical presence, you know, when he caught the ball, he was not giving himself up. He was not an easy tackle.
Yeah.
And I've never seen it since Andre, really, a wide receiver that many times. Just that first guy, he just walks right out of that tackle so easily.
Yeah.
So I love his physical ability with the ball in his hands. And he's a bigger guy.
Yeah, he's a big guy. I mean, he's, you know, he led the league in broken tackles after the reception last year. Mm-hmm. By a pretty healthy margin, too.
Yeah. Yep.
And I feel like it was almost, it still felt like he was just really getting a feel for it as he hit the playoffs. Because then that's where Shab, in the playoffs, man. Like a lot of those guys, like Dalton Schultz, Nico, and a few of the other guys, they like all of a sudden turned into savage mode. It was cool to see because it was a different.
Switch.
They flipped the switch that was different from the regular season.
Certainly, you know, and that's what happens when the playoffs hit. You just want to get hot, and they were the hot team there at the end of the year. And just, you know, you find a way to make plays, get it to your playmakers. Who knows what's going to happen? And it was fun to watch and see the team and the organization under D'Amico and what they've been able to do to just, you know, really just ascend.
Yeah, we have.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
If you want the real story behind the NFL, you need the Stinkin' Truth Podcast. Three-time Super Bowl champ Mark Schlereth breaks down the biggest plays, the biggest games, and the untold stories that make this game what it is. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I haven't even brought up D'Amico Ryan's name yet. Obviously a teammate of yours for several years. Was he somebody that when you were playing with him and you were opposite him in practice every? He's a quarterback of the defense.
For
you were
sure.
The quarterback of the offense. Was he a guy you saw right away like, this guy's going to be a great coach someday?
You know, it's hard when you're going through and you're playing to think about what the next step would be.
Sure.
But if you had to say 2007, 2008, 2009, you know, if you had to pick one guy on your team that was going to be a head coach and be so successful in his first year, it would have been D'Amico. There's a reason. You guys know it. His nickname was Cap.
Yeah.
And there's a reason for that because he loved being the middle linebacker, the leader of that defense, and just his style and how he went about relating to his teammates. You could see it. And his knowledge, and is someone that I just talk to all the time. You know, I'd tell him what I saw from the defense and what he was calling and what they were doing, and he was, you know, letting me know things I was doing in the offense where they were picking up some beats on some plays. So we had a really good battle during training camp, and that just made us better. But just his way he communicated with everybody, you just saw that. It's just so cool to see how he's just ascended in the coaching ranks.
Matt, Sean's heard this story before, so bear with me, Sean, but you'll appreciate this, Matt. My last year in the NFL was D'Amico's rookie year, and I was just it's August. I'm a grumpy, fat defensive lineman, a grizzled old veteran, and the first day that they had D'Amico go with the ones. I'm just thinking, like, I don't know, like, rookies, you know, I let him go with the one. He's going to blow this. And it was D'Amico. D'Amico's having a hard time spitting out the play call in the huddle. And I was like, come on, Sam. And I swear to you, he looked at me, and it was like he was the Beastmaster or something. I don't even know what he did. But he just, like, said three words to me, and all of a sudden I just calmed down. Yeah. Like a tranquilized rhinoceros. And it was right there. I was like, oh, this kid's. And then getting to know him, you know, he just had a maturity about him and a way about him that it's hard to. It was frustrating when the Texans were hoping to sign him or to hire him. It's one of those things that's hard to explain because I've never come across somebody like him before. So right. It's like, how do you explain? It just sounds like all the overly praised stuff that people say all the time. He's just different than other humans.
Sure, he is. And I'm sure when you probably had your hand in the dirt and you look back at him, he probably just had a big grin on his face because he loves football.
Yeah.
And even as a rookie and early in his career, like, he just loved being out there. He had a passion for just playing the game. And he just loved football.
Yeah.
And when you have a guy like that that was basically born and raised as a Texan, right, as a rookie, and he played here for 8 years, like, for him to come back, it means a little bit more. Whereas you see coaches that just are going to the next thing, climbing the ladder. They want to be, but he, it really, truly, in his heart of heart, it means something to be a Houston Texan in this organization, in this city. So there's just an added little factor.
That's rare. Rare that an NFL head coach chooses the city he wants to go to, because D'Amico said that in his opening press conference. He's like, he told them in the interview, which is bad negotiating, kids, what you're about to hear. He told them, this is where I want to be. This is where I want to be. And Caserio and McNair looked at each other like, well, I guess that's it.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
And it turned out to be a great fit, right? Because I think going into it.
Yeah. What was the group text like when D'Amico got hired here with you and all your former teammates?
Well, I got to say, I'm sure it was a busy time for him because it took him a little bit to get back to
I was talking about you guys and all your former teammates.
Oh,
like, yeah, D'Amico,
no, I mean,
you know, like,
it was one of those things once that season 2 years ago was over, because we knew he had some interviews the year prior that this was going to be the year, and it was like a no-brainer. It's like, this is going to happen.
Yeah.
So when it did, it was like, we already knew that this was going to be the thing.
It was just a coronation at that point.
It was just like the celebration.
Yeah.
Like, this is awesome.
Yeah. Matt Schaub joining us out here. Hey, did you used to host the Halloween party back in the day?
I did.
Yeah, I remember that. David Anderson, we've kept in touch. And Joel Dreesen was the Ultimate Warrior one year. The Schaub Halloween party was legendary amongst players that we used to talk to.
No, it was so much fun. My wife really took the bull by the horn, so to speak, on that one. She's such a fan of holidays, but Halloween is something different. So to be able to, like, have that time with the teammates where you can get together away from practice and meetings and all that is so fun.
Yeah. Honestly, you guys, like, it's rare in the NFL to have a certain type of camaraderie, like, or a feel about the, like, almost like a college feel to it. And that's why I always felt bad that you guys, you know, had a window there where maybe you could have gotten a Super. Like, I felt like you guys deserved to, because
it's a great group of guys.
It's just, you don't get to necessarily have that same chemistry and that same gel on most NFL teams.
100%. That's what made things so special and so cool to be a part of this team back in those days, because there were so many guys that were, you know, in the same walk of life, that were in that mid to late 20s, around 30, you know, getting married, having kids at the same time. And when you're going through those things, and, you know, it's just another level in that bond and that connection, like you hear about at college locker rooms, where you're getting out of practice, you're going to play video games, or hanging out in the dorms. Like, that was the feel that we had here. And, you know, it's cliche to say, but it's very true that you can find a way to have that be the difference in one or two games. And I'm sure if I really thought about it, I could pinpoint a couple that we won because of that. And it is a shame that we fell short of the ultimate goal a couple of those years, but it would have been fun to see how it would have shaken out in 2011. Hate to say it, when I had my foot injury, you know, because that was the year that our team was really breaking through, and especially on the defensive side. It's just a shame, you know, how things had
happened. In my opinion, that was the best Texans team, and with you at quarterback on that 2011 team, that defense was scary.
They were.
Yeah.
And, you know, we started off slow that season, but then we hit, I think, like a 5 or 6 game winning streak, and we were 8-3 there after Tampa Bay, and you know, we did a great job as a team, and the coach did great. And T.J. Yates filled in as a rookie, played extremely well that last month and even into the playoffs against the Bengals. But it would have been fun to see what would have happened you know, if we would have ended the season on a little bit different note. Have another home game in the playoffs, not have to go to Baltimore.
That Ravens game, you guys were running the ball on a very, very good run defense.
Yeah,
I'd watched every Ravens game that year, and that was the best anybody had been running the ball against him in that first half. But after, like, you can only sustain something without full force for so long.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Matt Schaub joining us. Before we cut you loose, because we know you got a ton of stuff you're doing today, you're looking to get into this broadcasting game, it sounds like. Are you? Is this what you're looking to do?
I am. I'm so intrigued by it.
Yeah.
And I've always been a fan of like radio, TV, the broadcast, talking football, talking sports. And, you know, I have a passion for this game. And yeah. just, you know, it's something that I want to dive into and see what comes to fruition. But it's fun. It's exciting. I'm glad to be on here with you guys talking Texans.
Yeah, for sure. And what are you doing today? You're going to do radio and TV.
Whatever
today.
Mark Vandermeer has for me. I think I'm going to do some radio, do a little of the TV broadcast, maybe get a quarter and a half of each. Just get, you know, get a feel for it.
Get your feet
see
wet.
See what happens. And I've got a few things this season in college. You know, my alma mater with University of Virginia some things in their games. So just seeing what comes to light.
Yeah. And you can do your own, like one of your fellow alumni, Chris Long from UVA, does. Like, he just kind of carves his own path. There's so many opportunities to do different things now.
Sure, yeah. I mean, in this day and age with the streaming and the podcast, he does a great job just, you know, doing his thing.
Being himself,
I mean, Chris is a little different bird, which we all have our own.
He's good at chopping it up.
He's good at packing a dip and talking to people.
Right, absolutely. Just having conversations. So
get some talking.
There's a lot of ways to do it.
Get some talking. Matt Schaub, all-time leading passer for the Texans, joining us here. Matt, we appreciate it. This was a fun conversation, man. Good luck with the new ventures coming
appreciate
up here.
It. Thanks
good
for stuff. Having me on, guys.
Good stuff. Matt Schaub joining us out here on Texans Radio.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
If you want the real story behind the NFL, you need the Stinkin' Truth Podcast. Three-time Super Bowl champ Mark Schlereth breaks down the biggest plays, the biggest games, and the untold stories that make this game what it is. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.